Thank you. Welcome to the third night of the 2009 annual town meeting. I call this meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox, and it's my privilege to be your moderator this evening. I declare a quorum present. Fred Pryor has been appointed assistant town manager in case we need the cafeteria. No, you don't think so? Moderator, that too. And it's supposed to be warm out tonight. Coffee and snacks are being provided this evening by the Haynes PTO. Our thanks go out to them. In case you haven't already, please turn off all your cell phones. Also, give your name and address clearly each time you speak in order to ensure an accurate record of the proceedings. And whatever you do, do not lower the mic because then we can't hear you. If you desire to be recognized, please just raise your card from your seat. Do not stand at the microphone to be recognized. After you are recognized, please stand so one of our runners will bring you a mic, or if you are near the aisle, you can go to the standing mic. When you receive a microphone from the runner, it will be on. There is no need to blow into it. As soon as you finish your questions or comments, please return the mic to the runner for the next speaker. So if you have more than one question, ask them all before you get an answer, and then give the mic to the runner. Our thanks go out to Dan Vogel, Scoutmaster of Boy Scout Troop 63, who provided us tonight with the volunteers. Matt Barnes. Matt, can you raise your hand? Matt, are you here? Okay, let's try Reed Meyer. There he is, back there. Thank you, Reed. And Leif Skromstad. Right over here, and I recognize the name. You've been with us before. Thank you. All motions to amend must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and the folks at the ViewGraph in writing before they are made to the hall. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows to the left or right. Unless you move in the words of the article as printed in the warrant, every presenter must tell the hall of any word changes in the motion and how they differ from the words in the warrant for the benefit of the hall. I remind the hall and presenter that the presenter has a total of 10 minutes and the timer will ring at 5 minutes just to let you know that you're halfway through and also for the benefit of the hall. Just a reminder that there's no audible sounds, hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or the like during the time that or after or before someone is speaking, and speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a speaker, a presenter, or a town official. I'm encouraging those of you who don't speak very often or who don't speak at all at town meeting to do so. I was asked to remind you of the materials concerning warrant articles on the table outside where you checked in tonight. Does anybody need a warrant? We'll have one of the Boy Scouts. If you do need a warrant, please raise your hand and keep it raised. Boy Scouts, could you bring warrants to anyone who's raising their hands? Anybody else need a warrant? Keep your hands raised, and the Boy Scouts will come to you. Up front here, do we have any more warrants? Patty, could you raise your hand if you do not have a warrant? We're going to get you some in a moment. Anyone else without a warrant? Okay. Does anybody not have a handout on Article 4 because the handout is different than what appears in the warrant? Could you raise your hand if you don't have a handout? Patty, can we get those to the Boy Scouts to give out? For those of you who don't have the handouts and worry and wonder why everyone else around you does have a handout, it's because they were given out when you checked in. And maybe you checked in early. Anybody else need a handout? Back there, please. All the way back. Anybody on this side? Right here. I tell you what, why don't you come up here? I'm selling my last one. Do I have a bid? No. Yes. Bathrooms are across the hall. And Ken McLean, our fire chief, had asked me once again to announce that emergency exits are the both doors you came in the back, and you also can exit on either side of the stage. I see that Superintendent of Minuteman Vocational Technical Regional High School, Dr. Ed Boquillan, is here. Dr. Boquillan, if you wouldn't mind standing up and showing yourself, thank you. And I also noticed that our state rep, Tom Conroy. Tom, if you want to stand up. Thank you. And before we take up Article 2, Patty Mostew, is you in the hall? Wants to say a few words to honor two folks from LS. Patty?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I think we would be remiss tonight if we did not recognize the change in personnel at both the Lincoln Sudbury School Administration and the School Committee. First, Dr. John Ritchie is retiring after 13 years of dedicated service, and whose place will be taken by Mr. Scott Carpenter. Second, school committee member Eric Harris is stepping down after 7 years. His position will be taken by Nancy Marshall. I would like to ask them to rise and be recognized. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On May 11th, 2009, the second night of our annual town meeting, the hall voted to refer Articles 2 through 8 to the selectmen to gather information relative to state aid to Sudbury and to report back to us tonight. I recognize Selectman Chair Lawrence O'Brien for that report.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Tonight, as we gather to conclude the business of the 2009 annual town meeting, the Board of Selectmen are prepared to report the following to you. First, the budget that will be presented for your approval this evening will be a non-override balanced budget. The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this budget, and we urge your support as well. The process of arriving at this budget, though, has not been an easy one due to all of the variations in state aid between the House, Governor, and Senate state budgets, along with the amounts and allowable uses of federal stimulus dollars. To reach a balanced budget, we have been able to make up reductions in state aid that total almost $600,000. We have done so in the following way. First, we've applied $323,000 in federal stimulus money that was slated for education to the budget. We have decided to forego a nearly $200,000 deposit to the stabilization fund, and we have received final assessments from the vocational high school, the state, and the employee pension fund that were lower than expected originally. And the final gap was made up by applying the minor surplus that we expected to have that had been projected earlier of $23,000. The Board of Selectmen urges your support of the budget that will be presented this evening. The budget that will be presented shortly represents a tremendous amount of time and effort and collaboration between the town and two school districts to reach this final recommended budget. We, the Board of Selectmen, applaud the work of Town Manager Valente, Finance Director Andrea Turkelson, Superintendent Brackett, Business Manager Mary Will, Superintendent John Ritchie, and Business Manager Judy Bellevue. While decisions made this evening will finalize the budget for the new fiscal year beginning on July 1st, in a matter of just a few short weeks, our thoughts will begin to focus on the 2011 fiscal year and the budget that will be necessary for that year. which will be even more challenging than the 2010 budget process has been so far. Now, why do I say this? Well, first, it is unlikely that federal stimulus dollars will factor into next year's budget. The state has requested and has been granted a waiver to distribute 2 years' worth of stimulus dollars all this year. Second, the state has yet to finalize any of the proposals that have been made relative to increasing the sales tax, allowing towns to vote on a local meals tax, closing the telecom tax loophole, and allowing cities and towns access to the state health insurance pool without having to pass through the current high hurdles that exist for cities and towns. Without any of these changes, it is highly unlikely that state aid to cities and towns will be increasing, and more likely they'll be decreasing for fiscal 2011. Third, negotiations with the police officers, firefighters, SPS teachers, and Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School teachers continue. Changes that have been proposed by the Board of Selectmen to the town's health insurance benefit program are being analyzed by the Sudbury Teachers Union as well as by the police and fire unions. We wait to hear their findings. Without the successful completion of negotiations, the town will have to begin developing the FY 2011 budget based on the current wage and benefit structure, which includes the current HMO Blue $5 copay plan, while continuing to pay the 90% town contribution towards that plan. Since wages and benefits comprise the two largest segments of the town's budget, without resolution to the negotiations, all cost centers will be forced to balance their budgets through continued reductions in staffing and service delivery. You will notice in the handouts that you've received this evening that, as you checked in, the addition of line item 1,000 to the figure that is titled Revised Article 4 Budget, Figure 1, Revised Article 4 Budget. This new line item in the budget has been added on the advice of town council to establish a health insurance reserve fund that will hold the maximum projected savings from the proposed changes to the employee health insurance benefit plan. The amount shown would otherwise have to be part of line 900, town employee benefits. Now, you may recall that I had mentioned in my remarks on April 6th that the Board of Selectmen had committed to the town manager, as well as Dr. Brackett and the Sudbury School Committee, that any savings generated from negotiated changes to the town's health insurance program would be returned to the respective departments to be used for the preservation of jobs and delivery of town services. The establishment of line 1,000 will allow any money that is available upon the successful completion of negotiations to be quickly returned to the specified department with a simple vote of the Finance Committee and the town manager. Without line 1,000, all fund transfers could only be made with the approval of a special town meeting. The Board of Selectmen, Finance Committee, and the Sudbury School Committee urge your support of line 1,000 as part of this year's 2010 fiscal year budget. Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Woodard will provide a more detailed overview of the town's finances in a few moments when he presents his State of the Town Finances remarks. The Board of Selectmen wishes to thank all of you for your patience and your willingness to extend this year's town meeting twice to allow town staff, along with the board and committee members, to present a balanced 2010 fiscal year budget.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Town Manager Maureen Valente for a motion on the Article 2.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to amend the votes taken under Article 3, FY09 operating budget of the 2008 annual town meeting by adding to or deleting from line items thereunder, by transfer between or among accounts, or by transfer from available funds as follows. From fund number 1204, insurance recovery receipts reserved for appropriation to 200 public safety, $26,319.94, all to be allocated to building repair. From abatement surplus to 400 public works, $100,000, all to be allocated to snow and ice expenditures.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Valente.
I'll try to briefly explain both requests and the nature of them. On the insurance recovery $26,000 matter, back in October of this past year, a water pipe burst in the Flynn building, causing moderate damage to both the first and second floors. The town has received reimbursement of this money from our insurance carrier to cover the cost of repairs. However, state law requires all insurance claim receipts in excess of $20,000 to be appropriated by vote at town meeting. This portion of Article 2 authorizes the town to allocate these insurance proceeds to the building department as reimbursement for the repairs that they paid out of their general operating expense budget. The cost of these extraordinary repairs represents a significant portion of that department's general budget for fiscal 09, and without this reimbursement being restored to their budget, the department will not have sufficient funds to finish out the year. The second item, the vote of the $100,000 to the snow and ice deficit. By state law, we are allowed, for reasons of public safety, to deficit spend for snow and ice beyond what the is amount appropriated for the year. However, doing so can have a negative impact on both our undesignated fund balance and our free cash. This winter, we had a particularly difficult time challenging for the budget. We were left with a snow and ice deficit of $312,179 beyond what we had appropriated. To date, we have made a number of adjustments to bring down that number. Thanks to Fire Chief Ken McLean, he put in a request for a grant to MEMA. We received $52,000 to help with that. We have taken money from the town's reserve fund and applied it as far as we can. Then we took money from other line items and transferred them to the extent and held spending frozen, et cetera, to try to keep working at this deficit. We were able to bring it down to $100,000 that we would otherwise have to carry into next year. We are allowed, again, by state law to carry this into the next year. But we did ask the Board of Assessors if they had extra money in their abatement surplus for FY09. They have voted to release that $100,000 so that we can apply it to the snow and ice deficit. This will allow us to end the year and not carry this deficit into FY10. FY10 is going to prove to be probably the most challenging budget year we've had in a long, long time. We just think it's a better idea not to carry this deficit into fiscal year 10. Doing so frees up the levy in FY10 so that we don't have to address that $100,000 deficit at that point. Thank you.
Marty Raganese, Finance Committee. Supports Article 2? Thank you. And Maureen, I assume that this motion differs from the one in the warrant in that it has the dollar amounts and also tells us from where it's coming.
Exactly.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 2? Please raise your card. I see none. All those in favor of Article on the motion as appears in the bugraph, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is a unanimous vote. We will move on to Article 3. Which is the stabilization fund. Mr. O'Brien, are you making the motion?
The motion is to indefinitely postpone, Mr. Moderator.
And does that receive a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien?
As I stated in my remarks, the deposit that the Board of Selectmen was hoping to have as part of this year's budget to be made to the stabilization fund was used to help bring the balanced budget in for this evening.
Marty Raganese for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee agrees that we should indefinitely postpone this article.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 3? I see no one. All those in favor, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it is a unanimous vote. We'll move on to Article. Was this the article? Article 4? Was this on the consent calendar? No. I wish there's a lot. Talked about in the budget in the warrant about our procedure, but let me repeat it for those of you who don't remember it from past years. The tradition in Sudbury is to first take a motion from the Finance Committee proposing a budget that would be limited to the amount that would be required to finance the Finance Committee's proposed budget. The limiting motion will seek a vote of the hall as to the overall limit on the budget. A vote in favor of the motion, the limiting motion, will not mean that town meeting has voted for a particular distribution of the total amount as set forth in the warrant or now as we see in the handout that you've received. But it will establish the upper limit of our budget for fiscal year 2010. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, the chair of the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line items 100 through 1,000 as shown on the handout that you have dated 6/15/2009, and ask if anyone has a motion to amend or a question on that particular line item. If you are at all uncertain about the budget procedure, as I've just explained it, please read the bottom of page Roman numeral 2 in the top of Roman numeral 3 in your warrant. I now recognize Charles Woodard as chairman of the Finance Committee for the budget limiting motion in the first part of Article 4.
Move that the amount appropriated under the fiscal year 10 budget not exceed the sum of $76,398,376.
Does that receive a second? It does. And if you look at your handout, it's the bottom line in the third column marked fiscal year 10 non-override. Mr. Woodard for a presentation. I should explain here. I've asked Chairman of the Finance Committee to give two reports, the presentation on the limiting motion, but also I asked him at this time to give his presentation of the state of the financial condition of the town. Sometimes we do that at the very beginning of town meeting, just as the selectmen give us the state of the town. Both of those reports are untimed, so the 10-minute limitation will not apply. Mr. Woodard.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Chuck Woodard and chairman of the Sudbury Finance Committee. The committee's role is to examine financial issues on your behalf, oversee the budget process, and make recommendations regarding the budget and other financial articles. The committee is comprised of individuals with financial expertise and varying demographics, including both members with children in the schools and senior citizens.
Excuse me. Can everybody hear back there? No. Chuck, could you get a little closer to the mic?
Like this?
Yeah.
Let me begin by noting again that after two postponements and 2 months of delay, the operating budgets of the town and the two schools are essentially unchanged. As Mr. O'Brien noted, however, getting there was not so simple. We went through 5 iterations of a proposed budget from the governor and both sides of the legislature, and then factored in federal stimulus dollars available to the two school systems, which reduced the impact of lower state aid. You can see the detail on figure 2 of the handout you received tonight. For fiscal year 10, we are recommending only a non-override budget, which is the amount of the proposed limit in the motion I just read. We are not recommending an override this year because, one, we're in the middle of the worst economic crisis since the 30s. The unemployment rate continues to rise, salaries for many of you are being frozen or cut, and personal retirement plans that depend on 401ks and IRAs, which is the large majority of us today, are down substantially. The average tax increase of 3.4% under the non-override budget is less than the recent growth in taxes, but nevertheless substantial in the current climate. And two, 95% of the increase in the budget over the past 3 years has been used to pay for increases in employee compensation, including benefits. We believe that substantially lowering the growth in employee compensation this year can eliminate almost all of the layoffs projected by the cost centers in budgets that assume closer to normal levels of compensation growth. For instance, and only by way of example, if there were a salary freeze, much like what the private sector is experiencing, total layoffs townwide, including both schools, would be less than 4 FTEs, or 0.5%. It is important to note, however, that changes in compensation of employees covered by collective bargaining are subject to negotiation. The non-override budget represents an increase in operating expenses net of direct offsets of 2.1% for each cost center over the fiscal year 9 budget. Although expenses are going up 2.1%, taxes will go up 3.4% to make up for the expected decline in state aid and local receipts. I have included this quote because I think it is very relevant to Sudbury today. As we have discussed at past town meetings, the town has operated in normal years with a structural deficit caused by operating expense growth of 4.5% to 7% per annum, compared to Proposition 2.5 funding that's closer to 3% to 3.5% per annum. Even though 2009 is not a normal year, we should not lose sight of the underlying mismatch between expense growth and revenue growth. In fact, because 2009 is not a normal year, perhaps the time is right to do something about it. Wages account for 60% of the operating budget. Cost of living increases in salaries combined with increases based upon years of service, so-called step increases, increase salaries an average of 5.7% per annum per employee over the last 3 years. Benefits and insurance, which comprise another 15%, have increased 10.5% per annum per employee, a sizable increase experienced in both the public and private sectors. And finally, payments on behalf of retirees for pensions and retiree health care, which comprise 3.5% of the budget, have grown 18% per annum over the last 3 years. If 78.5% of our operating expenses are growing at rates far above 3 to 3.5%, it's arithmetically impossible to keep expenses within the limit of Proposition 2.5 with our current cost structure. All other things being equal, an override will generally be an annual need absent unusual circumstances. So then the next question is, are the costs of running the schools in the town excessive? We don't think so, and we think this is confirmed by a wealth of third-party data. A Babson College survey of state high schools ranked LS second in academic performance and 10th in cost efficiency out of 140 schools. The Sudbury Public School System has the lowest cost per student when compared to K-8 systems in nearby Concord, Lincoln, Southborough, Northborough, and Carlisle. Expenditures per capita for town services, including police, fire, and DPW, are lower than many Metro West communities. So we have two alternatives at this point to an override, or at least to reduce the size of overrides. One, and this is the one we see most frequently, reduce staff and therefore services under the current organization and cost structure, or two, change the current organization and cost structure to enable us to deliver substantially, perhaps not completely, but substantially, the same level of services at a lower cost. With regard to the second alternative, the selectmen established the Budget Review Task Force in 2007 to examine our structural deficit. The task force was comprised of town committee members and other Sudbury residents with financial expertise and given a mandate to focus on both revenue enhancements and cost structure changes. Preliminary reports were delivered in September and December of 2008 and are available on the town website. They should be reviewed by any of you concerned with the rate of growth in taxes and spending. Among the major recommendations, consolidate the administrative functions of the two school systems, regionalize some town services in cooperation with neighboring towns, implement substantial changes to our health care plans, which are both high cost and high growth, and further support for longstanding recommendations to install a sewer line to service Route 20 and enable increased commercial development with resulting increases in our commercial tax base. Because 70% of our revenues come from residential property taxes, the burden of cost increases will continue to fall mainly on the homeowner until we build a larger commercial tax base. The proposals of the Budget Review Task Force will take time to be studied, and in the meantime, we have to deal with our current cost and revenue structure. 95% of the increases in the operating budget over the last 3 years have gone to increases in the cost of employee compensation. As a town, we have struggled over how to balance the quality of town and school services with their increasing cost when there's no obvious place to cut. The choice has usually manifested itself in contentious overrides, with taxpayers given the choice of a large tax increase or a major cut in staff, which in turn means services. Until there is meaningful structural change of the kind recommended by the task force, this scenario will likely continue. I'm gonna make sure I'm on the right slide. The cost of operating the town rose 6.6% per annum between fiscal years 6 and 8. From fiscal year 8 to fiscal year 9, expenses are essentially flat because of the override failure last year. We do not believe that a 6.6% rate of growth is sustainable over the long term. We believe the only way to slow down the rate of growth in spending near term is to recommend a limit on that growth. There's no other obvious break available which would change the pattern of large overrides or significant service cuts if the overrides are rejected. Over the past year, the Finance Committee initiated a spending growth limit to provide the town with a suggested cap on the rate of growth in expenses. Rather than wait until budgets were produced under collective bargaining agreements that were finalized, by which time our costs for the next 3 years would be in the pipeline, as they say, the FinCom voted in September 2008 to recommend a spending growth limit of 4.5% per annum for the three fiscal years ending June 10, 11, and 12. We believe that a limit supported by taxpayers should enable the cost centers to manage their missions by providing a predictable level of maximum expense growth in lieu of the current model of 1 year at a time budgeting and override decisions. We believe that the 4.5% number is at the intersection of a reasonable growth in spending, a reasonable growth in taxes, and a reasonable growth in employee compensation and other costs. The maximum growth in spending and taxes would be higher than some would like, and the increase in compensation, including health benefits, probably lower than some would like. In announcing this limit, we were informing the schools and the town departments in advance that we would not recommend overrides to support spending growth in excess of that limit during those years in the absence of major changes in circumstances or major increases in uncontrollable costs. As a result of the current economic and fiscal crisis, our no override recommendation is below that limit for the coming fiscal year. In the 6 years from 2000 through 2008, Sudbury's average residential tax bill increased 6.3% per annum. While certainly significant, the average residential tax bill for 11 other Boston suburban towns with similar demographics increased an average of 6.8% per year over that same period. While the rate of growth in taxes is less than the average of our peers, and our spending on schools and services is in line with or lower than our peers, the absolute dollar amount of taxes and its rate of growth continue to be a great concern. The level of taxes is heavily driven by the large number of school-aged children in town. The rate of growth in those taxes, on the other hand, is driven by our cost structure. We hope that the combination of a non-override budget again this year, a spending growth limit for the following 2 years, and the potential implementation of meaningful change to our cost structure and our revenue profile will provide some relief. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. O'Brien for the Selectman.
Support the motion, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. I'll now recognize the schools and the town departments with respect to their individual budgets before we open it up for a general discussion. So why don't we start with John Brackett, Superintendent of K-8 School Committee, the schools.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. In the next, do I have 5 or 10 minutes? I'm sorry.
Or four. It's normally somewhere between 4 and 5, but we'll ask the hall if you come to an end if they'll agree to listen a little longer.
Okay. In this brief time that I have, I hope to explain a little bit about the context of the non-override budget that you're hearing about tonight, and what it looks like in Sudbury Public Schools and what it means to us. First of all, in just simply the business terms of it, our budget for this coming year will be the net budget without benefits will be $27,322,748,000. It's that you can see in line 3. This is approximately just a little under $300,000 or 1% greater than what we had in the current year. I just wanted to note that as you compare that to FY08, which was 2 years ago, the budget is only a little over $300,000 greater than what we had to operate with, again, 2 years ago. It's about a 0.6% per annum growth over that period of time. The other important aspect of this budget is to note that it includes the use of $163,484 in federal stabilization funds or stimulus money that we're receiving. That is one of the major differences between the budget that you're seeing tonight and the budget you would have seen in April. Because of continued reductions in state aid, it was necessary to find creative ways of making sure that this budget works, and so both LS and SPS have committed that stabilization money to this effort. If we compare what has been happening for our budget, the line one shows where we started this fiscal year, the current fiscal year, FY09. But as you probably are aware, the governor and the legislature made cuts to our budget as we went through the existing year. And after the first of January, we had to begin to modify and reduce our spending. And in line two, you will see where we're ending up our year, and that we've had to cut spending by $217,000 during the course of this year. In looking at FY10, we started with some basic assumptions, many of which were given for consistency's sake to all cost centers by the Finance Committee. And so when we looked at those and we took exactly what we're doing right now and rolled them up, as we say, or moved them forward to FY10 with those assumptions about growth in salaries, growth in non-salary expenditures, our budget would have needed to be $34,994,000, or almost $35 million. However, the budget that you're being asked to approve tonight is for SPS is $34,270,641. So in other words, we have in front of us the challenge of cutting $724,000. $10 out of what we are currently doing if that would have been rolled up. What does that mean? How does that translate into operations and people and expenditures? In a very nutshell, we will be reducing our staff again this coming year by a little over 12 FTE. FTE is full-time equivalent, or the equivalent of full-time people. It's actually more bodies, but it's the equivalence of full-time. And that translates into elementary teachers and pre-K teachers of 5.4, one middle school teacher, 0.6, the equivalent of 0.6 in our curriculum, teachers in our curriculum office. And then in support staff, we will be cutting 5.3 FTE. That would mean secretaries, administrative assistants at the schools as well as at the central office and in our custodial staff. We are also then would reduce our supplies by about $115,000. I want to just note that we are constantly looking at ways to bring greater efficiencies to our operations. Sake of being open and transparent, these numbers, while used to balance our budget, also include nearly six FTEs and almost $350,000 that we are going to realize from either reducing staff because of enrollment shifts or changes or reorganization that we are doing throughout the district.
John, the 5 minute
okay.
Time is up, but I'm going to ask the hall if they'll give you permission to continue, but I usually give them some idea of about how much longer you think you might be.
1 minute.
Is that fine with the hall? Anyone opposed to that? Very good. Go ahead, John.
Thanks. On this last slide, I just want to state that even with this cut, our intent in Sudbury Public Schools is to continue to offer a quality program. We are not going to wallow in what we can't do and what we don't have. We're going to build and celebrate what we do have. However, it is important to understand that there are going to be changes and there will be different service levels as we go forward. And I just call your attention to the lower part of this slide where it shows two-year accumulated total cuts of $1.7 million. And that means that we will have cut 34, over 34 people, FTEs from our staff, and our staff is around 400 FTEs. And it also means that we are using our federal stabilization funds and we've raised fees a year ago to help offset this budget. So in summary, that is what's before you. We feel that we can work with it and make it work. And while there will be changes in service, there will certainly not be a lowering expectation of quality. Thank you.
Thank you. John, while you're still there, question for either you or the chair of the school committee. So I take it from what you said that the school committee is supportive of the limiting motion for the non-override budget. Thank you. The answer was yes, for the benefit of the hall. And we'd now like to hear from Jack Ryan on behalf of the LS school committee.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'd like to address the hall briefly with respect to the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School budget. Unfortunately, the news is not any better than what you heard from the K-8 system. I think the first slide we have summarizes exactly what happens with respect to the budget gap. What description up there referring to the baseline budget is essentially our level services budget using the FinCom recommendations and the FinCom assumptions that they asked us to use. That is, keeping the number of staff and teachers the same. Our enrollment next year will remain essentially the same as it is now. And if we were to keep the staff and the support the same as it is now, using again the FinCom recommendations, it would require a budget of approximately $24.8 million. The no override budget, which we were asked to prepare for this meeting and by the Finance Committee, is $23.7 million, which means we had a gap of $1.1 million. We then tried to look at how we could try and close that gap since the numbers were published in the town warrant. And one benefit we had was we had assumed a health insurance increase of 9%. As it turns out, our health insurance cost increase was less than what we thought it would be. It was only 6%. We saved $138,000 there from the assumed budget. As many of you know, we had a vote regarding Section 18, which required Lincoln Sudbury retirees to go on to a Medicare-based health plan from the health plans they were on. And we had originally thought that the savings from that vote would be approximately $125,000. It turns out to be better than we thought. It turns out to have been $251,000. So because we had assumed $125,000 and the actual is $251,000, we saved another $126,000. As you know all very well, fortunately for him, but unfortunately for the Lincoln Sudbury Regional School District, Dr. John Ritchie will be retiring. And I just want to say on a personal note, I have had the absolute pleasure of serving with him for the 11 years I have served on the Lincoln Sudbury School Committee, and for every one of those 11 years, except maybe one night during a building committee meeting, it was an absolute pleasure to have served with Dr. John Ritchie during those 11 years. There was a dispute about an outlet in the gym, as I recall, but it has been an absolute pleasure for me to have served with Dr. John Ritchie over those 11 years. So much so that my daughters wanted to make sure they were at the reception last night to see him. As a result of the change and Scott Carpenter coming on as our new interim superintendent and principal, we were able to save another $42,000 there. The total of that is about $306,000. Now, in addition, we also received stimulus funds under the special education grant, and that was approximately $186,000, which we can apply to the budget that we didn't know about when we did our initial budget. And that, combined with the savings I just outlined, brings us to about $500,000. Now, the remaining money that we would have to save, the other approximately $600,000, is going to come from a series of sources. The first will be a reduction of just over 9 full-time equivalent positions. One housemaster, as you know, Scott Carpenter was a housemaster. The number of houses at Lincoln Sudbury will be reduced from 4 to 3. Over 5 teaching positions, or teaching full-time equivalent teachers. What we try and do is spread it out so that no one department takes any particular strong hit, so that the children, the students, are serviced as best as possible. We'll also reduce essentially one office assistant, educational support, and a custodial and maintenance position, or one half of a custodial and maintenance position. In addition, we will be having reductions in supplies, materials, and equipment. And I just want to make a note here. Remember, every time you reduce materials, and everyone keeps saying, well, can you reduce materials? It compounds itself. That means the books you're replacing the next year are fewer than the books you replaced the year before, fewer than the books you replaced before that. And that means educational materials are getting, for lack of a better word, older and older. It's not that we shouldn't be using books, but folks, as you all know very well, education is moving at a very fast pace nowadays. In addition, we're reducing our custodial services and supplies, and reducing athletics and activities.
Jack, 5 minutes is up. About how long you think it might be?
About one more minute or so.
Yes, about a minute or so. Any opposition, that's fine. Go ahead.
In terms of the revenues that we are, assumptions we made, we have a reduction in Chapter 70 and in the regional transportation. We are presuming that district receipts, fees, and that sort of thing will remain level. And we also have stabilization funds that we received, which were used to compensate for the losses that we had in state aid, both in Chapter 70 and in stabilization funds. So that was used to offset the loss he suffered in stabilization funds. I just want to show what is going to happen, though, when we go forward at Lincoln Sudbury. Enrollment has grown every year since 1995. There are 700 more students than there were in 1995. Enrollment will be flat for next year, but from FY11 through FY14, we will expect to increase by 100 students. The staffing has not grown proportionately, and this graph, we could go ahead. This graph shows what is happening. Students are increasing, and faculty and teachers are increasing at a much smaller percent. The delta will get worse next year. We will still provide excellence in education at Lincoln Sudbury, but it is becoming more and more difficult. Thank you very much.
Jack, same question. Is the LS Regional School Committee supportive of the limiting motion for the no override?
Yes, we would support the motion, the limiting motion.
Thank you. Maureen Valente, town manager for the town departments.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The town of Sudbury, our purpose, as I say it every year, is to protect public safety, public assets, public health, and a special quality of life here in Sudbury. When the selectmen and I began preparing the FY10 budget, we were already looking at an FY09 municipal services budget that was $84,000 less than the FY08 budget. We had reduced positions, as you've heard Sudbury Public Schools and LS had done. And even beyond the 7.05, we've had more departures and retirements, which we have not filled in an effort to keep dealing with the financial situation that we are at. We made a number of cuts as well, both because of the 9C cuts of the governor, the local receipts, and the snow and ice deficit that I mentioned under Article 2. So we continue to cut in FY09, and that was our basis for FY10. Our budget is based, broken up into three major clusters, which we present every year: the general government, as you, and I compare on this chart, the 09 appropriation, not what the final spending is, because we've reduced that from the appropriation, but at least what was appropriated. You can see general government, or we're proposing, is lower than 09, public safety lower than 09. The only major department we're showing planning a budgetary increase is public works. Why? Two reasons. One, we cut them far too much for 09, and we saw that in terms of many of the problems we had keeping the vehicles, the Sanders on the road, paying the gasoline, a whole variety of issues that were just, we had the worst time coping with the DPW budget this particular year. But two, the contracts for those two sets of employees, the highway employees and the engineering, are already set. We'll be in the third year, so their cost of living increases is already built into this. With all the other groups, we are still negotiating those. We do not have anything built into their departments for the cost of living or any contractual increases for those. So they are unique in the DPW. Going forward from there. Overall, you can see it's about less than 1% before benefits, 1.67 with benefits, but that includes using ambulance receipts to help support the fire department. That's all they're allowed to be used for. The assumptions that we made in putting together this budget, you've heard from Chuck Woodard as chairman of the FinCom. You've heard from John Brackett. He mentioned them as well. They gave us a set of assumptions to work from. I just want to compare those so you can see how we built the budget. We were told you could allow 2% for cost of living increases, a reserve for that. I've only put 1% in this budget right now. If I put 2%, I would have two more positions. I would have to specify where I'm reducing. So for now, I'm only carrying 1% in this particular budget. That doesn't mean that we will end up settling at that. There's a whole process that has to happen. That's just the amount that's in a reserve right now. Health insurance, the FinCom has suggested 7%. We have a 3.8% we're bringing in here. It's the same plan design and contribution rate because we haven't been able to conclude bargaining, which we are hopeful will end up with changes in that. And so going on from there, the entire budget increase at that point. The staff reductions I indicate there, we're looking at somewhere between 6.5, 6.9, depending how you quantify them. I just want to look at that here. There's part-time positions across the board that are being reduced in addition with last year. They're proportionate with the size of budgets that you're seeing with Sudbury Public Schools and LS for our piece of the budget. It's a proportionate number of positions being reduced. We would have reduced one more, except in recreation, I think, as we mentioned, we were able with the town of Wayland to create a shared recreation director, and I think that's one of the first in the state that I've heard of, and that helped us support save a position in recreation. And again, depending on what happens with that cost of living, it could be two more there. We have vacancies in police and fire. You see those numbers there. At this point, the budget does not include enough money to hire those one firefighter and one police officer. I conclude by talking about long-term solutions because I think it's important to look for the future. You've heard about that from Chairman O'Brien. You've heard some from FinCom Chair Chuck Woodard. We have to use the current situation as impetus to evaluating and making changes. We've used a process called CORE, which stands for consolidation, outsourcing, regionalizing, and evaluation, to begin looking at the different ways we're doing things and look at opportunities for change. Through evaluation process analysis, can we make the payroll process simpler? Can we make AP simpler? All these different processes we do, finding savings, and hopefully that's paid off already in one position we've looked at. Regionalizing, I mentioned with Wayland, we're looking at the other communities around us. Better cooperation with Sudbury Public Schools and going forward with LS, and really looking at how many of the things we do are similar. And so can we find savings, consolidations, better approaches to doing that, real commitment to working that through. The budget review task force suggestions have been mentioned, and we will be looking at consolidating those. 30 seconds?
Go ahead.
And finishing with all of those. We want to make sure all the decisions are carefully made and are based on goals, that there's data available for them, and that we're focusing on what it is that we want out of those as we move for the future. Employees and I, we speak of core values, our mission statement. This is ours, again, protecting public safety, the public assets, public health, and a special quality of life. We, the staff of the town, are here to work with the elected and appointed officials, with residents, with our business sector, to protect your public safety, to protect all of our shared publicly owned assets and treasures, and to protect this quality of life here in the town of Sudbury. Thank you on behalf of all the town employees and the selectmen for your continued support. Thank you.
Maureen, I have a question.
From
me.
Okay.
The same question I asked both schools. Do you and the selectmen support the limiting motion as made by the Finance Committee?
Yes, we do.
Thank you. The answer was yes. Now that we've heard from all the departments, we now want to hear from you. Is there anyone who wishes to be heard on the limiting motion, not the line items, but the limiting motion which establishes the upper limit of the budget? Yes, could you keep your hand raised and stand, and the Boy Scout will bring you the...
Hi, my name is John Harding. I live at 12 Darrell. I'd like to propose an amendment to the limiting motion to change the number to 78,175,576.
Hang on a second.
Which is the amount of the fixed growth on the chart.
So we look at the handout, and you're looking at the fiscal year 10 fixed growth number 78,175,576?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you if you'd like to make the motion in the following words. I move to amend the limiting motion by deleting 76,398,376 and replacing it with 78,175,576. Is that the way you wish to make the motion?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Can you please write that out so we can put it on the view graph? We got a lot of folks out there who would like to see it in writing. Can you do that?
Me personally?
You're the one making the amendment.
I don't have a pen.
You don't have a pen. Mary, Mark, can I just give you that motion and you can write it down and to make sure the hall understands what it is? Basically, the motion to amend is to move from the non-override budget to an override budget. That's going to be his motion to amend, as I understand it.
Correct.
And Mark, can I give you that? So can you get it into the computer and put it on the screen? Okay. Do I need to repeat it? I move to amend the limiting motion. To amend the limiting motion by deleting the number 76,398,376 and replacing it with 78,175,576. Does that receive a second? It does. Sir,
yes.
Do you want to stand and give your presentation? And when you finish, could you give the mic to the Boy Scout?
Yes. Despite the protestations of all the people who have spoken that this is not going to erode the quality of our town and the quality of the schools, I disagree. We're in a slow starvation budget, but each year cutting more, cutting more, cutting more. We don't have a lot in this town to sell. We don't have a cute little downtown. We don't have an interstate. We don't have an employment base. What we have is quality of life and schools. No one's going to buy our houses if we don't have good schools. I figure when we lost the override budget election last year, I lost about $20,000 that night. There were people at work that were going to buy houses in Sudbury. They read that the next day. They bought them in Weston. Over the last couple of years, last year or so, I've lost about $200,000 worth of home equity, not because of this, because of what's going on in the mortgage crisis. Interestingly, Weston, Wellesley, and other towns that have fully funded their schools have not had that loss in home equity. I can't afford it. It would take me about 20 years to make up in lower taxes what I lose in one day if we don't fund our schools adequately. And I wasn't planning on staying here for 20 years. You know, I might like to retire before meeting. So I feel like this is a slow starvation budget. Every year, we're in denial. I'm a doctor. I see this all the time. That people refuse to accept their diagnosis. They wait too long. Then they have a terminal illness. And I look around this town, and I think everybody's in denial. We have to do this. I'm not getting a salary increase this year. I'm going to have to cut something else to pay higher taxes, just like everybody else. I think it's great that the town employees should have the same kind of, flat increases, the minimums contractually allowed. But there's too many unknowns in this. There's too many other things that are going to affect us. You know, when our assessments go down because our home equity goes down, we're going to have a lower tax base. We're going to need to do an override anyway. So I just think it's just blindness. And we just need to bite the bullet, have a budget that at least funds stable teacher ratios, stable services. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard? Now, we're only talking about the amendment, which would be to change the FinCom's limiting motion from a non-override to an override. Yes, Mr. Woodard.
I have some remarks.
Please.
Thank you. The Finance Committee opposes the proposed increase in the budget limit above the non-override amount. If approved and appropriated, this budget will require an override vote in a special election. It's too much, it may not be necessary, and we don't know how it can be justified with so little specific knowledge of what it is for. First, it requires too large a tax increase at a very difficult time financially for many. The tax increase for the average homeowner with this proposal would be 6.5%. Second, it may not be necessary. The town, the Sudbury Public School System, and the high school have publicly discussed tonight override budgets that result in total layoffs townwide of almost 30 employees. This is obviously distressing. It's distressing the people who would like to support the override, and it's an important desire behind the desire to increase the budget. But let's remember again that 95% of the increase in the budget over the last 3 years went to employee compensation. If town employees, I'll say this again, if town employees agree to a wage freeze or the equivalent in changes to health care benefits, the number of layoffs under a no override budget would be less than 4 FTEs at most. Third, we don't believe that the budget increase is justified. Employee compensation accounts for 78.5% of our budget, and negotiations on new labor contracts covering most of our employees are ongoing and not yet completed. You can basically think of our entire budget as headcount and those contracts. And until those contract negotiations are completed, neither we nor anyone else here has any way of knowing how any additional funding, this additional $1.8 million, would be spent. We don't know how much of it would go to save or restore jobs and how much of it would go towards compensation and benefits increases. And we don't know, and most importantly, we don't know whether the new labor contracts would result in any changes to our cost structure. Both the Finance Committee and the Board of Selectmen believe that no override in any amount should be considered until there has been meaningful change in the cost structure of the budget, which would lead to ongoing, meaningful reductions in the town's structural deficit. Until that deficit is addressed, the only solution available is regular and large overrides, which we believe is unsustainable and unacceptable. Thank you.
Anybody wish to be heard? Anyone else wish to be heard on the amendment? Yes, over there, please. Can you give it back to just there's a there should be a button on there.
There, yeah.
Yes,
Art Gutt, Silver Hill Road. I really like what this gentleman said, but I'm trying to figure out how we make a decision when we don't have the information. I understand what you guys are trying to do with the bargaining, but how do we? What are you asking us to do?
Who is that question addressed to?
All these nice people up here that are trying.
Hang on a minute. So the chair of the Finance Committee can answer that.
I think the bottom line is pretty simple. No override, salary freeze or its equivalent, essentially no layoffs.
What happens if we don't get the concessions? You're asking, you guys know something. We don't. So,
Hang on a second. This is not a give and take. Okay, you can ask as many questions as you want, and we'll try to get an answer. But after you ask those questions.
How do we make a decision without the information?
Is there any other questions you'd like to ask?
If you can answer that, I'm happy.
Great. Can you give the mic to the Boy Scout? Mr. O'Brien.
Maybe I can try and answer the gentleman's question. Sorry, is that better? There we go. Try and answer the question differently. In the event, let me change that phrase, until negotiations are completed, we operate under the current benefit, salary, and step structure until the end of June. Then July 1st, obviously, the new fiscal year begins. And upon the start of the new fiscal year, if negotiations are still continuing, then there will be no COLA increases for any of the town employees, as well as the regional high school employees, because their contract would have ended. So they have a zero COLA, but steps are in place for the town. I'll allow SPS to address this, Susan, if you want to go to this, but steps will remain in place for the regional high school employees and all of the town employees. And that step increase is approximately 4% on the town side. That would go into effect. And the current health plan and the 90% contribution level that the town makes would continue until those items have been settled through negotiations. So, as I stated in my remarks, we will go into the new fiscal year, and we will continue operating at this high benefit cost level, and only when negotiations have completed, and if they're successful and the cost structure was lowered, would we be able to reap some benefits. How long those negotiations will take is I'm unable to answer for you, and to settle or to balance a budget for fiscal year 2011, in the event that no negotiations have been completed and they're extended for an extremely long period of time, then the only way to balance that budget would be, as I stated, through reduction in staffing. Unknown, you couldn't ask Cal because I don't think there's any department head in the room prepared to answer for 2011 as of yet, and also reductions in delivery of services. Does that better answer your question?
Hang on. We're going to go to some other folks, and if you have a follow-up question, I'd be glad to entertain it. Yes, could you stand up, please?
Susan Tone, 14 Newton Road. So just help me out here. Let's say we pass the override here. Then it has to go to a special town election. If it doesn't pass in the town election, what then happens?
Well, unless there's additional language added to the main budget motion saying we don't have to come back, then we have to come back for a special town meeting. Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on just the amendment, please? Yes, back there.
I just have a question.
I just need your name and
address. Diane Seligman, 23 Ruddock Road. 23 Ruddock Road.
Thank you.
The difference in chart 1, figure 1, and figure 3.
The difference between...
Well, the total numbers, I don't understand where the difference comes from.
So the difference between figure 1 and figure 3?
Yes.
Yeah, figure 3, for those of you who are looking at your handout, is on the other side of the page. Let's try and get that question answered.
Maureen Valente.
Some parts of the budget are covered. Thank you. Some parts of that in figure three will be covered in other articles. Right now, this is just the operating budget, which is covered under Article 4. So you're not going to see perfect one-for-one between them.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, could you please stand? Thank you.
Yeah, John Harding, 12 Darvel. I'm just unclear about two things that I heard. One, I heard Mr. Brackett say that there's going to be layoffs of about 15 people, and then I heard no layoffs. So I don't understand that discontinuity. And well, maybe you just meant no layoffs in the town, but what about the schools? And then second of all, I heard that there would be no plan for the incremental money that would come from an override budget. And yet I have a budget here that has a whole plan. So I'm uncertain what that means.
Thank you. Can someone clarify the layoffs versus the, yes, I'll Chuck answer. Woodard, Finance
I'll
Committee?
Answer. I think what I said was, with a no override budget, if there is a salary freeze or its equivalent in benefits, we would have essentially no layoffs, less than four employees townwide, including both school systems. And I think the point about the use of an override is you're basically providing a pot of money, the allocation of which nobody really knows until the contract negotiations are complete. So you don't know of this additional money that you're planning to provide to the three cost centers, how much of it will go to compensation increases, and how much of it will go to retain jobs.
Yes, Susan Giuliano, chairperson of the Sudbury School Committee.
First, I want to say that the Sudbury School Committee agrees with the concerns stated by the proponent of the motion. We are concerned about the level of services in our school and town, and we're concerned about the cumulative effect, not just this budget, but those in prior years, and we're concerned about future years. And our hope is that going forward, we can all collectively, together, work on a plan that will help us provide for appropriate overrides in future budget years to sustain the kind of services that you're describing. I also agree with Mr. Gutch and others that one of the frustrations of this year is the lack of information. It makes it difficult for you to make a decision. But I can say that our recommendation is based on the information that we have available at this time, that we regard this as the best balance. When I say this, I mean the non-override budget that's been presented tonight, as the best balance among several imperfect circumstances at this point. The number that you heard as to the layoffs for the Sudbury Public Schools, which is, I think, about 12.3 FTE positions, is based on the assumptions that are currently built into the non-override budget. We don't know if all of those assumptions will still be in place at the end of our negotiations. So there is a level of uncertainty about how our operating budget, including our benefits, will ultimately be allocated. So it is unclear. But given the various circumstances, the information we have, the economic conditions, and the state of this information, this is what we've recommended at this point. But we certainly do hope in the future that we will be able to build on this in terms of providing better support for the schools going forward. Hope that addresses some of the questions.
Thank you. And anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment to the lending motion? Yes, could you stand up, please?
Charlene LaFerrere, 47 Windmill Drive. May I ask how long negotiations have been going on and where are they? Because I hear we're talking about it, but we don't know if we've been doing it for 30 days or 90 days and whether we're real close or not even in the ballpark.
Right. Good news and bad news on the question. We can get the first part answered about how long they've been going on. What's been going on is private information that's not allowed to be disclosed, but let me get as many answers
okay.
as I can.
Thank you.
Yes. Who wishes to answer as to how long negotiations have been going on?
For the town, probably about 2 months. I'm not sure for the schools.
Mark Collins?
At least 6 months.
At least 6 months for LS. Schools about the same, local schools? About 5 months for the local schools.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, way back there in the middle. Could you stand up, please?
Hi, Robert Capaccio, 337 Hudson Road. I think the town should be commended for trying to hold the line on the budget this year. I know the Lincoln Sudbury Committee, the school committee, all should be commended on trying to hold the budget so the taxes can stay. I know those taxes are going to rise slightly even with this budget, but it's not going to rise to the extent it would with this override being amended, if it was amended. I think the fact that the health care costs are rising out of hand across the country as well as in our state, as the president's speaking of and everybody's speaking of, healthcare rising through the roof, and we're considering every time I pay my insurance premiums for healthcare, goes higher and higher and higher. So when a doctor tells me that he wants more money, I accept that because that's what the doctors and the health professionals always ask for, is more money. They never hold a line. It's always go up, up, up. Well, again, I'm glad that the school committee, I'm glad the Lincoln Sudbury Committee, I'm glad the selectmen and our finance committee could actually hold the line this year when everything's so tight. I'm an engineer. I just sold my engineering company. I had to pay extremely high taxes selling it. I'm happy to be in this country. I love the country. I'm born here and everything. But to see taxes even go higher, now that I'm retired, I'm a little bit more cautious. I know there's other folks that are retired here that are on limited incomes like I am now, and I think it's important to realize that if we can hold the line on this year when prices are so, inflation may be coming, let's see what the facts show next year. Let's see what the Finance Committee recommends, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment to the limiting motion? Over here, please, could you stand up in front? Thank you. Right behind you.
Matt Copeland, 17 Oak Ridge Road. I just want to agree with the gentleman back here. I think it makes complete sense to hold the line this year of all years. And I don't have a great feel for the room or where people lie, but I don't want to see this pass and not have said something. So I think anyone who thinks that we can vote for an override or a partial override and have negotiations work out in our favor afterwards, that's just silly. Like, when we say we'll give you as much money as you want, but if you're really nice, you could maybe not ask for quite so much. That just seems naive. They're not going to take it if we stand there with an open wallet. So,
thank you. Please stand way in the back.
Call the question.
Hang on. There's one gentleman on the end here who's had his hand up for about 20 minutes. I'm going to hear him, and then I'll hear your question. Yes, sir.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. This is directed at Mr. Woodward. I'm curious, given this past year, and we saw state aid cut, and there were layoffs at SPS and LS in January, I, too, am not particularly in favor of the override budget at this point. What I ask, though, is if we have a worst case, like a perfect storm in the worst case scenario, where the union's contracts don't fall in the town's favor as we predict, and we also don't have the budget, the state aid budget, pass as we are hoping, because that still is not settled. Do we come back for the possibility of an override? Do we then have to lay off, instead of 15 teachers at SPS, 17 teachers or 19 teachers? How does that work should we have a worst-case storm? I guess that's...
Yeah. Mr. Woodward, Chuck, are you prepared to answer that?
The budget that is agreed upon tonight is the budget for the year, unless we have to go to a special election, and then we'll know what that budget is. But the budget, the spending budget, is what it is. If the revenues aren't there to meet it, then we'll have to cut. We'll have to cut expenses. So if state aid drops yet again, we could very well end up with layoffs.
Okay. The question has been called. For the benefit of the hall, can I just see those people who have new information to add to this amendment? I see no hands, so we needn't vote on the call of the question. We're going to go right to a vote on the amendment, which is shown on the screen, with those numbers to change the non-override budget to an override budget. All those, this is a majority vote. All those in favor of the amendment signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's got well more than a two-thirds majority against. So the motion fails. Anybody else wish to be heard on the main motion, which in this case is still the limiting motion, which we can put on the screen, which is the bottom line in your handout under the non-override column. Does anybody wish to be heard on the limiting motion? I see no one. All those in favor of the limiting motion signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It's well more than 90% that's in favor, so the limiting motion passes. I recognize Charles Woodard, Chair of the Finance Committee, for the main motion on the budget.
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the warrant under Article 4 in the column Fiscal Year 10 Non-Override for Fiscal Year 2010 as amended by the handout entitled Figure 1 Revised Article 4 Budget ATM Handout printed 6/15/2009. The following items to be raised as designated by transfer from available fund balances and intra-fund transfers. From the Ambulance Reserve for Appropriation Account to Public Safety, $381,600. From Abatement Surplus to Unclassified Benefits, $321,000. The sum of $5,189,919 being a portion of the sum set forth as Sudbury Public Schools Employee Benefits to be immediately transferred and added to Item 900, Town Employee Benefits, so that the employee benefits total will be $9,804,084 to be expended under the direction of the town manager, and the sum of $1,028,704 being the remaining portion of the sum set forth as Sudbury Public Schools employee benefits to be immediately transferred and added to Item 1,000, Health Insurance Reserve, so that the Item 1,000 Health Insurance Reserve total will be $1,514,372.
Yes. Which number? $5,919,189. Is that what you read, Mr. Woodard?
I read 5189919.
No, Chuck, can you?
They wrote it down backwards.
It's 5919189. Does everybody agree that? Hang on a minute. The number on the screen 5919189. Ms. Turkelson, is that the correct number? Yes.
I stand corrected.
Okay. So. His motion includes what's on the view graph, 5919189. Thank you very much for the point
Thanks
of order.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Are you interested in putting your name into the Finance Committee?
Item number 1,000 is to be expended at the direction of the town manager for the purpose of increasing the amount required for item 900 to the extent necessary for those purposes. Any balance may be expended at the direction of the town manager with the approval of the Finance Committee, subject to the provision that any balance of the funds transferred from the school budget and receiving such approval shall be returned to the Sudbury Public Schools budget, and to authorize the purchase of equipment funded under this budget by entering into lease purchase agreement.
Before I ask for a second, Mark, can we go back to the very first slide? No, the next one, I'm sorry. It's slide two.
Thank you.
Chuck, on that very first paragraph, the last line, last two lines says, Figure 1, revised Article 4 budget, ATM handout printed 6/15/2009. Is that part of your motion that you read, all that?
Yes.
It is. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard for a presentation.
Let me explain why we have proposed the creation of line item 1000, the health care reserve fund, for each of the town and the Sudbury Public Schools. As you heard earlier, the town and SPS are negotiating to make changes to the health care benefit provided to town and school employees, which is presently both very expensive relative to what is typically offered in the private sector and experiencing rapid growth in costs. If you look at page FC14 in the warrant, you will see line items for SPS employee benefits and town employee benefits, along with SPS gross expenses and various categories of town expenses. The labor contracts that will go into effect upon the expiration of the current contracts are still under negotiation. If there's no change to the health care benefit when negotiations are completed, the amounts for SPS employee benefits and town employee benefits, including what is in the reserve fund, will not change. The budgets presented in the warrant did not try to assume a specific contract outcome. If, on the other hand, contract negotiations result in a change to the health care plan, the expectation is that any reductions in the cost of health care can be transferred to other line items, probably for a combination of payments to employees in return for accepting the change, and for use in the operating budget to retain employees. By moving expenses from our fastest-growing cost item to any other cost item, we reduce the rate of growth in spending, a very important fiscal goal of the town and school management. The total amount of the budget would not change, and I'll repeat, the total amount of the budget will not change. Negotiations to change the health care plan are in part a response to the efforts of all town officials to slow down the growth in spending and, as a result, taxes. In support of that effort, the Finance Committee adopted the spending growth limit I discussed earlier to be used in its evaluation of budget requests. The only way to live within those limits without laying off employees is to reduce the rate of growth in spending and, in particular, compensation, which is precisely the incentive to negotiate hard for changes to the health care benefit, historically our fastest-growing item. Unfortunately, the budget mechanics of effecting these changes are not so simple. In the absence of the creation of the proposed line item 1000, any movement of money from one line item, health care, to another after town meeting requires the approval of a subsequent special town meeting. This creates two problems. One, the need to call yet another town meeting at additional cost to the town, and two, and I think more importantly, it undermines the contract negotiations since the town and school officials negotiating the contracts cannot guarantee to the union negotiators that the health care savings will be used as promised in the negotiations. Having negotiated many contracts myself, I can assure you I never agree to an important concession unless I have agreement with someone on the other side who has the authority to deliver their side of the bargain. As an alternative, and with the approval of town council, we're proposing that the maximum expected amount of health care savings be transferred to this line item 1000 for each of the town and SPS. Once contract negotiations are complete and the actual savings are known, the amounts in the reserve fund will be transferred back to the town departments and SPS when requested by each cost center at the direction of the town manager and with the approval of the finance committee. Each cost center's respective contribution to the health care reserve fund will be transferred to the cost center's operating budget or back to its health care budget or some combination of the two as required in order to deliver its side of the bargain with the union and or as needed to fund the current health care plan. I'll repeat it again. There will be no increase in spending under the budget of either the town or SPS. The Finance Committee approval would be handled at a public meeting to review and discuss the contracts and approve the requested transfers, and it will be taped for playback on the town's website for the benefit of anyone interested but unable to attend our meeting. This Finance Committee meeting will be preceded by a press release from the cost center requesting the transfer, announcing the results of their contract negotiations, and providing details on the transfer of funds from the Health Care Reserve Fund. In addition, the public is invited to ask questions of the school committee or the Board of Selectmen or attend and offer comments at their public meetings. We urge you to support the creation and funding of line item 1000 to facilitate contract negotiations that are designed to slow down the growth in spending. And finally, and in anticipation of the question, none of these remarks apply to the Lincoln Sudbury High School, which has a separate health care plan, a separate budget, and with the authority that any other regional school district has to move money between line items as long as the total appropriated budget remains unchanged. Thank you.
Thank you. Selectmen.
Selectmen support the motion.
The selectmen are in support of the motion. We will now use the same procedure that we've used for the last two decades, a limiting motion followed by the line items, which we'll do now. I will start by reading the budget in numerical order by title, sort of in numerical. I'm actually going to follow the order that you have in the handout. And I'll be reading, when I get to a line item, I'll be referring, because of limiting motion, to the third column that's marked on your handout, FY non-override. So again, I will, if anyone has any motion to amend or a question on a line item, please just raise your hand. For example, I will say 200 public safety. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a question involving 200 public safety? If someone has a motion to amend to increase a line item, which would make that line item greater than the one marked FY10 non-override on the handout, then the motion to amend must be in one of two forms, one of two ways. One, I move to increase 200 public safety to the sum of X and to reduce, for example, 600 culture and recreation to the sum of Y. X and Y must balance. And the reason is because this hall has just passed a limiting motion, limiting the amount in the third column on this handout. The second motion to amend that could be made is simply, I move to reduce line item 200 public safety to the sum of X. Since you're reducing it, the limiting motion just gives you the upper limit of the budget. So those are the only two ways you can make a motion to amend on a line item. A motion simply to increase a line item will not be accepted unless you show where you're going to get the money from. Again, this is so because consideration of the budget has been preceded by a vote limiting the total budget amount. We will then debate and vote on any motion to amend. We will attempt to answer any questions that you have. We will arrive at the end of this process with a main motion as it may have been amended, and then we will vote on the main motion. Having said that, we will now start with line item 300, the first 300 on your handout, Sudbury Public Schools net. Does anybody have a question or a motion to amend on that line item? Yes, right here, please. Stand up.
Susan Litowitz, 199 Concord Road. On page FC17 of the warrant, I would just like someone, if they could, to please tell me what constitutes $3.6 million in special ed instruction expenses.
Can you tell me approximately where that is on page FC17?
It's in the FY10 non-override column under expenses, fifth item down, special ed instruction expenses.
$3,621,176?
Correct.
It's approximately in the middle of the page. We'll get an answer for you in 1 minute. You need more time, or? Okay. John, can you just, we can't get it for the record if you don't speak here.
That line item is primarily designed to budget for out-of-district tuitions. It's not entirely, but that is the predominant use of that line item.
Thank you. I'm so, Okay. John, can you just amplify on what out-of-state tuition means?
It's out-of-district tuitions are tuitions that we pay to educate Sudbury children whose needs we cannot meet in the Sudbury public schools, and they will attend a school or a collaborative that has the programs designed to meet their needs.
Thank you. Anybody else have a question on that line item? I see none. We'll now move on to the next item. Anybody have a question or an amendment on line 300, SPS employee benefits? I see none. The next line item is 300, SPS health insurance reserve. Motion to amend or a question? I see none. The next line item is 300, LS operating assessment net. Next line item is 300, LSRSH debt assessment. Next line item is Minuteman regional assessment. Next line item is 300, other regional school assessments. Next line item is 100, general government. Next line item is line 200, public safety. Next line item is 400, public works. Next line item is 500, human services. Next line item is culture and recreation, 600. Next line item is 900, town employee benefits. Next line item is 900, town-wide operating and transfer. Next line item is 1,000 SPS / town health insurance reserve. And our last line item is 700 town debt service. We'll now have a vote on the main motion. And it's, can we have the first part of the main motion for the budget, Article 4? And this is a majority vote. Does anyone need to see the entire motion, or do you all understand what it is? You would like to see the entire motion? Okay. Can you slowly scroll down to slide two? You all set with slide one? To the next slide, please. Slide three. All set? Next slide, please, if there is one. Yeah. Is that the last one? Why don't we leave it there? Yes, sir.
James Hill, 199 Concord Road. I have a question to the last sentence where it says to authorize purchase of equipment funded under this budget by entering into lease purchase agreements. Why it's being limited to purchasing the equipment that way versus being able to purchase it outright as well?
Town Council?
Mr. Moderator, that is not limiting. It just gives us the option. In order to do a lease purchase, there has to be a separate vote.
So it is doing what you said. You're able to do both.
Right.
Yeah. Anybody else have any questions before we vote? Yes, please.
John Harding, 12 Darvell. So this is an expense budget, and I'm used to seeing a total budget. and I don't see the revenue here. And so I understand why we're not doing that, but what I just want to know is, what are the revenue assumptions that go into this budget? So, you know, it seems to me like it's a blue sky assumptions that we're going to get state funding as you think it's happening now, that the tax assessments will not go down, and therefore we're going to have the tax assessments we have now. What are the assumptions, and then what happens if those assumptions become proved invalid?
Maureen Valente.
Let me take a cut at answering that. On the reverse side of your handout, Figure 3 revised summary, there is a statement of the receipts from there. It shows the assumptions for state aid, and at this point, we have to rely on the best information that we have from our legislators. They are in conference committee. My understanding is between the House budget and the Senate budget, the conference committee is working on that. They have to come somewhere between the two of those. There can't be a whole new number thrown in out of somewhere else. So we're within that range of comfort at this point in time. Would I like to have it already voted? Of course I would, but they're not going to come out of conference committee, I understand. Tom, I don't know if he has anything different, but June 18th or 19th. We do know the rest of the school debt reimbursement. We will receive that. That's a grant payment. The local receipts, you can see we've already reduced our assumptions way below FY08, but we because we see that pattern coming in at this point. They're all based on experience looking at 12 months. The abatement surplus has already been voted by the Board of Assessors for us to use that amount. Enterprise fund is based on the history of running those enterprise funds. Just like this year, the main source of uncertainty for us will be state aid. Even if the state legislature sets a budget and the governor signs off, if their revenues continue to falter, they could come back and give the governor authority to reduce state aid during the year, calling those 9C cuts. If they do, depending on the severity of it, we will have to get together as the school committees, the finance committee, the selectmen, see how bad it is and try to work out what's the best option to do from that point. There are several, you know, options we could take, reduce spending, and look to see if there's any other way to raise receipts. We'll just have to deal with it at that point in time. This is, I think, from the finance director, Andrew Turkelson, and myself, as conservative a revenue estimate as I think we've done in a long, long time. So there is obviously the chance something could go wrong. But we think this, you know, this is the best we can come up with in terms of what we plan. Just a note on the property taxes is that it's the assessment times the rate equals whatever budget we vote. So it's assessment, some go up, some go down. The rate is adjusted for that. It pretty much will produce budget-wise the number that is the budget depends on.
Thank you. We are now prepared to vote on the main motion, as you've seen it on the screen, which is our budget motion. All those in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, it's actually a unanimous vote. Before you, it is Doug Cohen from Capital Improvement Committee. Can you come forward, please? And while we're waiting for him, let me ask you, we just have a few more articles to go, and we'll be able to finish up in very short order. Doug Cohen is from the Capital Improvement Planning Committee, and will make the motion under Article 5.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Doug Cohen. I'm on the Capital Improvement Planning Committee.
Doug, a little closer to the mic.
Sure. And just some background very quickly. We are a committee made up of your fellow townspeople that was formed to vet the capital projects. So I'd like to read the motion. To move to appropriate the sum of $523,383 for the purchase or acquisition of capital items, including but not limited to capital equipment, continuing payments of existing lease purchases, construction, engineering, design, and renovation to buildings, said sum to be raised by taxation, and to allow the purchase of equipment hereunder by entering into lease purchase agreements.
Does that receive a second? It does. Doug? You have a presentation?
Yep. Just pulling up the monitor. As I mentioned, we are comprised of your fellow townspeople, and I think we are a diverse group of people. ranging across ages, genders, geography within Sudbury, and career backgrounds, and I think the town is well represented on the committee. So what is in our purview? We oversee capital items, which are single-year cost assets over $10,000, as well as multi-year cost assets of more than $100,000. And the way the process works is the town manager presented us with all of the projects from the various department heads, which totaled $622,108. And then it was our job to vet those projects and get that down to the budget, which was $523,816 based on the non-override budget from 2009. So the first department that made requests was the building department, and they made three requests. The first is various building improvements. That's somewhat of a general fund that they can pull from to work on various projects that may come up throughout the year. What was requested was $35,000. What was approved was $25,000. The second was the town hall handicap entrance. There is an entrance on the town hall that is needs repair and needs to be built for handicap accessibility, and what was requested was $14,000, and what was voted on was $12,000. And finally, there was the fire station headquarters paint and various trim jobs that needed work, and what was requested was $38,000, and what was approved was $33,000. And the reason across the board that we approved somewhat less than what was requested, first of all, is because obviously we need to make important cuts across the board, and every group has to sacrifice. But second of all, what we had heard from multiple constituents, including the building department manager, is that the public bids tend to come in at or above what's budgeted for them. And so we didn't think it made sense to approve a higher amount given the state of the town's finances right now. So the total requested was $87,000, and what was approved was $70,000. The next group that made requests was the fire department, and they had two requests. The first was an outstation's window replacement for Station 3 and for Station 2, and what was requested for it was $20,000, and what was approved was zero. The reason for that is a couple of things. One of them is that it is not entirely clear what the status is of Station 3, and so we wanted to, before approving improvements to that building, we wanted to understand what the status would be of that. And then the second is that there was a 2009 study to renovate these outstations, upgrade them, and we wanted to wait and see what the results of those that study was before approving any work. The second item was the Station 2 light. So Station 2 is on Route 20, and several years ago there used to be a traffic light there, which is intended for the safety of the firefighters when they're pulling out of the fire station. It has been long gone. It was hit by a car and hasn't been there. This year happens to be a good year in terms of the state being willing to contribute engineering designs so that the fire department just needs to finance the actual building of this light, and so we voted to approve this Station 2 light. The next group is the DPW and the Parks and Grounds. The first item are previous lease payments. So these are pieces of equipment or trucks that have already been purchased. They're in five-year leases, and these are years two through five of the leases. It's $246,761. We already own these pieces of equipment, so we voted to approve to continue financing them. And then there were four vehicles that were requested, and we voted, as opposed to the total for them was over $100,000, and as opposed to voting on that, we decided to cut some of that budget and approve $79,000. But we did not vote on specific ones. We wanted to leave it to the discretion of the DPW manager to understand which trucks are the ones that need the most replacing. And again, you know, in this economic climate, we've got to make cuts across the board, and this is one area where we felt that we had to make. So the total that was requested was $367,486. The total that was approved was $325,761. Next slide. And then from the other groups, the library requested a RFID self-checkout. And what that is it's an automated technology that makes it the checkout process and the inventory process much quicker. It improves the level of service pretty significantly within the library. The total cost of this, it's a two-phase project. And the total cost is $190,000 of that. The phases are independent. So phase one enables the library to significantly increase its service to the town without phase two ever being approved. Okay.
You got another 5 minutes.
Sure. And in addition, of that $190,000, the library is going to finance $70,000 of it. So they're requesting in this year $80,000 to finance phase one, and we approved the $80,000. The next project was from the assistant town manager. This was an ADA compliance study. It was requested $20,000. And basically what this was to hire consultants to come in across the buildings throughout Sudbury and make sure that they are ADA compliant. ADA is the American Disabilities Act. And so we actually approved, we did not approve this project because we didn't think that it was a capital item. And it's not clear that it would protect the town from any litigation. All this does is identify things within the buildings that might be out of compliance that then further down the road need to be put into compliance. The next item was from the selectmen. This was a municipal tax software lease payment. This is software that was purchased in the previous year, and this is just making the payment on the software. We all voted to make that payment. And then finally, the selectmen requested another copier. Originally, the request was for two copiers, but given the state of the town's finances, they reduced that request to one copier for $10,622, and we voted to approve that. Final slide summarizes each of the requests that we had, what was requested, and what was approved. And as you can see, we had $622,108 requested, and then approved $523,383. So we had to cut about $99,000 from the budget and fell within our target for the non-override budget for the year. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee supports the article.
Thank you. A selectman?
Board of Selectmen supports as well.
Thank you. This motion differs from what you saw in the warrant, as this one has the final numbers and does not call for borrowing, and therefore it's a majority vote. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 5? Please raise your card. Doug, that was some kind of presentation. You got the hall here. All those in favor of Article 5 as it appears? Oh, I'm sorry, there is a question. Is that a question? You're just voting prematurely in favor? All those in favor of Article 5 as it appears in the warrant, in the view graph, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is a unanimous vote. Get this guy's name down for the Finance Committee, too.
We did already.
Article 6. Bob Jacobson of the Finance Committee for a motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $301,842 for the Transfer Station Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 2010 and further to authorize use of an additional $30,953 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs, such sums to be raised by $286,000 in receipts and use of $46,795 of retained earnings of the enterprise.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Jacobson?
Finance Committee recommends approval.
That was a nice, concise presentation. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 6? I see I'm sorry. Way back there, middle all the way to the rear.
Roger Nichols, 220 Old Lancaster Road.
Could you just repeat that and hold it a little closer to you?
Roger Nichols, 220 Old Lancaster Road. The sum of 301 is not the same as 286 raised by taxes, but 286 plus the other digits don't make 301. So in other words, it says raising $286,000 of receipts and $46,000 and some of retained earnings, adding those two to the numbers is way more than 301. Can someone explain the discrepancy?
Yeah, Maureen Valenti.
I don't have the calculator in front of me. Does it equal 301 plus 30,000? I hear from my staff down here that those balance each other. So you're seeing the appropriation in two pieces? He's appropriating the sum of $301 and further authorizes the use of $30,000.
So it's $330 plus is the expense, $46 is retained earnings, and $286 from the town.
That's correct.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 6? I see no one else. All those in favor of Article 6 as shown on the view graph signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? That is a unanimous vote. Article 7. Bill Nealon of the Finance Committee for a motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $476,592 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for fiscal year 2010. Such sum to be raised from $460,000 in receipts of the enterprise and the use of retained earnings of $16,592 of the enterprise, and further to authorize the use of an additional $61,905 appropriated under account 900 fiscal year 10 town employee benefits for indirect costs.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Nealon?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Thank you. Mr. Keller for the Selectmen.
The Selectmen likewise recommend approval of this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 7? Yes, right here, please.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Am I right that by the time all the amounts balance out here, that the pool is still running at a substantial deficit? It looks as though the amount of receipts is not going to be enough. I mean, by the time you add that additional $61,900 in there, it looks as though the pool is running at a loss. Is that in fact the case, or am I reading it wrong?
Maureen Valente?
Yes, you're reading it correctly, Mr. Coe. The pool for the last, I think it's about 5 years, has not generated enough receipts to pay for the benefits of the employees. It pays all the direct costs, but that was a decision that we brought and deliberated and said at that point that the benefits would end up being covered under the taxation port, not under the enterprise fund portion. The Park and Rec commissioners, every time they have looked at raising the rate higher to cover that, they get so close to the other private pools that they start driving down membership, and this was quite a substantial discussion that happened several years ago. So that's why you notice that piece of it is not being covered by the fees of the enterprise fund.
Thank you.
Mr. Moderator, a follow-up question. I'm not up for making a big issue of this at this late hour, but the way it was several years ago is not the way things are now, and talking about substantial cuts in other areas of schools and so on. When the argument is made that raising the rates drive the rates up to be close to those of a private pool, then one possible interpretation of that is that the public pool isn't needed that much, because if people are willing to pay to join the private pool, why do we think we have to stay in that business? I'm not opposed to the pool, don't get me wrong, but I'm just wondering whether at this particular time running that kind of deficit in the pool makes a lot of sense.
Mr. Mutter, if I can just respond.
Yes, Ms. Valente.
Just I want to make sure that I don't necessarily mean it's a problem that it reached that. I think, as I said, then the membership start to drop off. And the part of the discussion was the pool provides such public benefits to our school swim teams, to our seniors. Again, we went through this discussion that, yes, we should be closed down the pool and just have private open. And we came to that determination that, you know, there's many assets of the town, a basketball court, a tennis court, there's no fee to use. There does happen to be one with the pool, but it's still a public amenity this town had voted for. So I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's just the discussion that had happened at that point.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? I see no one. Article 7, as it appears in the view graph, all those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is unanimous. We're about to get on to Article 8. Before we do, I would like to first thank mostly all of you for coming here on a not-so-warm summer night, the third of 3 months now, August 6th, May 11th, and today, June 15th, to exercise your legislative authority. Thank you all very much. Also, I think you all can be very proud of both school districts, as well as the Finance Committee and the Selectmen, and Maureen Valenti for the town, for all getting together and bringing to us a unified budget in the most difficult year I've ever seen in my 40 years in the town of Sudbury. Thank you all. And also, some of you may not know that there's something called the Budget Working Group. It's made up of the LS superintendent and SPS superintendent, as well as both business managers. From the Finance Committee, Messrs. Woodard and Jacobson and Ms. Raganese, Mr. O'Brien for the Selectmen, Mr. Ryan at LS, and Mr. Gargaya, thank you. SPS School Committee, Ms. Santinelli and Ms. Giuliano. And for the town, Ms. Valente and Ms. Turkelson. What they do as a smaller group is get down to the nitty-gritty in how can we work out our differences and bring a unified budget to the town so it's not one department fighting against another like used to happen in the good old days. So I, for one, am much appreciative of that. Having said that, we'll move on to Article 8, Assistant Town Manager Wayne Walker. For a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
I move that the town vote to establish a recreation field maintenance enterprise fund commencing July 1, 2009 for the purpose of maintaining the town's recreation fields to be funded by recreation and other designated income and donations and to accept the provisions of Mass General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 53F and a half, insofar as necessary for the establishment of said fund. And further to next. Appropriate the sum of $160,000 for the Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund for FY 2010. Said sum to be raised by transfer of $10,000 from the FY 2009 Park and Recreation 53D account and further to authorize use of an additional $150,000 of enterprise receipts for direct costs.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. My name is Wayne Walker. I'm Assistant Town Manager and Human Resources Director for the town. I also oversee and coordinate the departments of the town covered by our culture and recreation cluster, which includes the library, Council on Aging, Veteran Services, and the Park and Recreation Department. Accompanying me tonight is DPW Director Bill Place, who served as chairman of the task force that developed the recommendation to establish the Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund that you're being asked to vote on tonight. One way or the other. Next slide, please. As many of you know, our former recreation director, Dennis Minoni, left the town's employ last October after 6 years of dedicated service, and we have been without a permanent recreation director since that time. I have been overseeing the department in the interim with the able assistance of Pat Haberstroh, the administrative assistant for the department, Jessica Bendel, the youth coordinator, and Tim Goulding, the aquatic facility director. This is the reason I am making this presentation tonight for the recreation department. I am pleased, however, to be able to report that we do have a new recreation director. Although she was introduced by the moderator at the last session of town meeting, I'll briefly introduce her once again. She is Nancy McShay, who she's the current director for the town of Wayland, and she comes to us with more than 10 years' experience as a director, currently in Wayland, and prior to that in the town of Acton, and she comes to us with impeccable credentials. And Nancy has been and will continue to be spending a few hours a week in Sudbury for the rest of the fiscal year to familiarize herself with our department. She will take over as recreation director for both towns beginning on July 1, and I will be turning these responsibilities over to her. I am here tonight to explain the purpose of this request to establish a new enterprise fund for recreation field maintenance. So we all know, to accomplish all of the tasks involved with field maintenance at the current time, we rely on divided budgetary support. from the existing Park and Recreation Revolving Fund and from the regular Park and Grounds Division budget under the jurisdiction of Director Place of the DPW. The Enterprise Fund mechanism, as outlined in Section 53F and a half of Chapter 44 of the General Laws, is intended to provide a logical and effective framework for the operation of municipal services that are ongoing business-like enterprises. In other words, those with fairly predictable services and costs and with regular staff who perform all of the work of the business operation. We have learned from several years of experience with other Enterprise Fund operations, specifically for the transfer station and for the Atkinson Pool, that this method of operating and funding provides a high level of successful performance for certain labor-intensive services desired by our residents. We believe we will experience the same level of success with the Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund. The current revolving fund mechanism is limited to payment for supplies, contracted services, and seasonal personnel only, and excludes payment for salaries of those permanent town personnel who devote a significant amount of their time to field maintenance operations. With an enterprise fund, it will be possible to budget for the amount of the time actually spent on these tasks by the four permanent full-time members of the Park and Grounds Division of the DPW. By accounting for the actual personnel cost and also closely tracking costs for materials, supplies, and contracted services, it will be possible to calculate with 100% accuracy the actual costs incurred on an annual basis for field maintenance. Another significant advantage of employing an enterprise fund for this purpose is the ability to keep retained earnings from year to year so as to have a source of funds for necessary short-term and long-term capital and other improvements. This ensures that the cost of improvements in the fields and recreational facilities covered by the enterprise fund are fully paid out of the revenues derived directly from their use. By contrast, under the revolving fund method, all receipts in a revolving fund must be spent down by the end of each fiscal year to a maximum of $10,000, thereby allowing no retained earnings for future needs. Further, the total amount that is authorized for any department for revolving fund purposes can be no more than 1% of a town's previous year's tax levy. With current revolving funds for youth services and for the teen center activities and programs, we are approaching that limit. Finally, with no change in the current method of maintaining our fields, it will be certain that we will not be able to add any much-needed field maintenance staff, and there is a real possibility exists that staff may be reduced or lost. It is anticipated that the revenue deposited into the enterprise fund from field permit fees and user fees will fully support all personnel, materials, supplies, and equipment costs associated with regular maintenance and improvements to our fields. In his address at the opening of this town meeting in April, and repeated again at the second session 1 month ago, you heard Chairman O'Brien of the Board of Selectmen refer to the concept of local sustainability. The recognition of this concept is even more critical now as the general financial circumstances facing the state and its cities and towns as well have deteriorated even further. Establishing this enterprise fund is intended as part of our effort to ensure local sustainability. It will also enable us to continue to meet the challenge of maintaining the high-quality recreational facilities, athletic fields, and recreational programming sought by our citizens and for which the town of Sudbury has become known. We urge your support for this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Keller for the Selectmen.
Selectmen support this article. It's a mechanism for us to free up other monies in the budget and will have a beneficial effect for years to come.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 8? Yes, all the way in the back, please.
Roger Nichols, 220 Old Lancaster Road. Does that $160,000 include personnel costs, or is it just cost for grass seed, fertilizer, water, electricity, that sort of thing?
Those are all of the costs for the enterprise except for permanent personnel costs. There are some seasonal personnel costs included in that amount.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Can I ask a follow-up?
I'm sorry?
I have a follow-up?
Yes, go ahead.
Does the permanent personnel cost come from the DPW?
Currently, the permanent personnel cost, yes, comes from the Park and Grounds Division of the DPW's budget.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, down in front here, please.
Tom Holliker, 623 Concord Road. Have you considered the possibility of folding the Atkins Pool enterprise into this field maintenance enterprise so that you would have a kind of grand recreational enterprise operating in town?
Maureen Valente?
I think if this is a success, that is something we can look at. Other towns have a complete Department of Recreation Enterprise Fund, and so we could look at that as this develops. But at this point, because it's brand new, we don't think that's the best idea to start off, but certainly that's an idea for the future.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard under Article 8? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion on the Article 8, as you see the view graph, signify by raising your cards. Thank you. All opposed. It is well more than 90%. Do I have a motion to dissolve the annual town meeting of 2009 at long last?
So moved, Mr.
Is there a second? All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It is actually unanimous. Thank you all very much.